All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM, and you're just listening to Always Remember by Drumming Now. Now, we're very happy to be joined by our second guest for the program, Renfrey Clark. Renfrey was actually the Green Left's full-time Moscow-based correspondent covering the Soviet Union and the then restoration of capitalism between 1990 and 1998. And we have Renfrey on our program today because Mikhail Gorbachev recently kind of passed away on the 30th of kind of August, and we wanted to have a bit of a discussion about with Renfrey about his legacy, especially since, you know, there is often a bit of a contestation about it. So good morning, Renfrey.
Good morning, Jake.
Okay, so I guess to start off, Gorbachev passed away on August the 30th, and since then there's been a whole host of commentary on his legacy, and I guess what he represented. You know, we have those on the left, probably more from a more Stalinist sort of, or potentially Maoist sort of tradition, you know, arguing that he was sort of part of destroying socialism. And of course, there's others on the right who go into the other direction. They say that he was a great reformer of modernizing Russia into a capitalist state and, you know, brought Russia into the 21st century. So I guess what is your sort of, you know, as someone who was actually there and also from the perspective of someone who has been a long time sort of committed socialist, you know, what is your, what do you sort of think is the real legacy of Gorbachev?
Well, what did Gorbachev achieve, as we can see looking back after several decades? Did he bring about democracy in Russia? Well, no. The space for opponents of Putin in Russia today is extremely constricted. The parliament is made up of yes people. The media have been comprehensively tamed. Did he achieve the modernization of Soviet, then Russian society? So, well, not really. The first development after the reinstitution of capitalism in Russia was economic collapse. By 1998, Russian GDP was only a little more than half of what it had been in the final stages of the Soviet Union. So what did Gorbachev actually do? What had he achieved? I would say that he prepared the way for and partly oversaw the capitalist counter-revolution that put an end to the Soviet Union. Was the USSR socialist? Only in a certain very limited sense. In the Soviet Union, you had nationalized property relationships. It certainly wasn't capitalist. That kind of society was fundamentally different. But while you had these nationalized property relationships, you certainly didn't have the effective, directly exercised power of the working class in society. Rule in the Soviet Union was carried out by what the better kind of analyst has described as a bureaucratic stratum, that is, of people who held positions of power within the state and industrial apparatus and who exercised that in defiance of the working class who theoretically held power in the country. And they gave themselves various important privileges on the basis of their control, not ownership, but control over the means of production. Now, this was a society that had many terrible contradictions. And eventually it entered into crisis, particularly after 1975. By 1985, when Gorbachev came to office as General Secretary of the Soviet Communist Party, it was in profound crisis and heading into outright decline. There was an understanding in this ruling bureaucratic layer that things couldn't continue as they had been, that there was a need for reform, for doing things differently. They put Gorbachev as the bright, relatively young, bureaucratic official with a good record as a tough administrator, as someone able to make difficult decisions and carry them through. They put him into power, into the leading position. And his job, as they saw it, was to fix the mess. Now, who was Gorbachev at that stage? He'd made his name as the head of the Soviet Agricultural Administration, a very difficult portfolio. It had limited success when nobody else had been able to achieve anything much. And he was relatively young. He was smart. He was abrasive. He was prepared to push out people who were simply getting in the way. I regard Gorbachev as having had a kind of dual character. He was part of that bureaucratic apparatus. That was his background. That was what he was used to operating within. He had this illusion, I think, that the necessary changes to the system could be implemented from above without the mass intervention of the working class. He saw those changes as being able to be carried out essentially through the old methods of the bureaucracy, without fundamentally altering things and allowing masses of the working population genuine political power. This was at the same time as he had much to say about the need for democracy and openness in the Soviet Union. If you remember, you know, we need democracy like we need air. I don't think this really entered into his operating method. Now, at the same time, Gorbachev was a member of the Soviet liberal intelligentsia. At the same time he was a bureaucrat, he hobnobbed continually with this stratum of people in the Soviet Union who were educated, who had positions more or less comfortable and prestigious, the people in the think tanks, in the institutions of the Academy of Sciences, some of the more open-minded industrial administrators, so on. And as a member of the intelligentsia, he was profoundly influenced by liberal attitudes. He was somebody who had gross illusions in what capitalism could achieve and in what capitalism had achieved in the West. And when we think about the West, the Soviet liberal intelligentsia of this time thought in terms of Sweden and not of Somalia. Most of the capitalist world, when you think about it, is poor and only semi-developed. It's only a few very favoured countries, Europe, North America, Australia, and so on, where capitalism is really prosperous and gives relatively good lives to the bulk of the population. In most of the capitalist world, it didn't. But the Soviet liberal intelligentsia was blind to most of the capitalist world. It saw only the Swedens and not sub-Saharan Africa. Now, the process, it's defined as reform, and up to a certain point, Gorbachev was trying to push reform. Fair enough. What were some of the reforms that he attempted to carry out? I think he had this illusion that relatively minor methods, relatively superficial methods, could do the trick, or at least this hope. The anti-alcoholism campaign, because widespread alcoholism in the population at large was reducing the dynamism of Soviet society, which by this stage was pretty stagnant. Right, you deny people the right to buy liquor freely. Now, there was experience of this in the West in the 1920s in the United States with prohibition. What it involves is handing a major industry over to the mafia. And that was what was done in the Soviet Union during the late 1980s. That anti-alcoholism campaign was a fiasco. It was a failure. It greatly multiplied corruption in Soviet society. And Soviet society had been dependent on the revenues from alcohol sales, and those were largely lacking now. So it introduced a shortfall of government revenues at the same time as it solved none of the fundamental problems. And what else? An acceleration campaign. You give people material bonuses, higher pay if they actually produced, if output went up. The trouble was that the workers enjoyed the bonuses, they received the extra pay, but the increment in production was just not there, so that you had excess purchasing power in the economy at the same time as you didn't have an increased flow of commodities. That spelt inflationary pressures at the same time as prices were tightly controlled. That meant shortages. And the shortages contributed again to corruption. There were other, perhaps more fundamental reforms that Gorbachev attempted to implement. The most important of them was that he gave extensive new powers to factory directors, to enterprise directors, to determine how they produced, what they produced. He relaxed the planning apparatus. Now, it was true that the style of Soviet planning was very constrictive and that it gave very little room for people in the factories to determine what they produced, what made more sense. But at the same time, you needed the planning. And the planning was largely abandoned. What that meant was that the enterprise directors began producing what they found most profitable and what was not necessarily what was needed by Soviet society overall. This added to the shortages because the enterprises couldn't make money out of making all sorts of necessary things, and they simply didn't get produced. That sent waves of chaos radiating through the economy. That reform was again a failure. Another reform, cooperatives, allow these enterprising people who had a little bit of capital to set up small businesses. Now, that made a lot of sense because Soviet society, the Soviet economy had been nationalized down to a rather absurd degree, to the point where you couldn't set up a small private business for many decades. That meant that a lot of petty goods and services were simply not available. You had to try to get things through corrupt means or you just went without. But the trouble there was that the people who had money, the people who had access to enterprise funds, siphoned them off, set up their own private businesses, their own, well, not cooperatives, but their own private companies operating semi-legally. Again, a source of corruption, a source of enormous confusion within the economy. And you had, on this basis, a new capitalist class congealing within Soviet society, within the layers of bureaucrats, particularly of industrial enterprise directors. And this was about the stage that Soviet society had reached when I went there in 1990. It was an appalling mess. You could not get the most basic commodities that you needed. Corruption was just about universal. The population was profoundly demoralized by the society that they lived within. But most importantly, I think, the people who actually held power in one way or another, exercised power, regarded the socialist system with absolute cynicism. They were just looking sideways, waiting for somebody else to jump, after which they would jump as well. And so as the socialist system foundered, a new capitalist class was coming into being, a corrupt capitalist class used to operating in the fashion of Soviet bureaucrats. And you had...
Renfrew, just interrupt you there a bit, getting into... I was thinking that I think you've given up given a kind of good kind of overview, I guess, of the kind of legacy, I guess, of Gorbachev, but also, you know, what the kind of restoration of capitalism has sort of had sort of meant for the Soviet Union, because in the end of the day, you sort of... You make a good sort of reference to the fact that actually, you know, people's living standards actually sort of plummeted following the kind of restoration of capitalism. And there's also the fact that, you know, it is actually a reality that a lot of people are incredibly kind of nostalgic for the Soviet Union and of the Soviet system because of a lot of the disaster of these kind of capitalist sort of reforms. But I guess I want to sort of take the question because we're running a bit, we might be out of time to go out into everything. The kind of next kind of the important sort of question, I guess, for our listeners, I guess, is in terms of, I guess, the legacy of Gorbachev, the country, you know, today, Russia today, I guess, under the leadership of Putin, does it kind of represent a sense of continuity with the old Soviet era of the Russia? That's what, you know, conservative commentators try to claim. Or is it, I guess, more or less continuing this sort of line, I guess, of capitalist restoration? Because, you know, there's clearly almost like an argument as well about, especially Putin's actions around Ukraine, that, you know, the Putin sort of regime almost sort of has expansionist sort of tendencies. It's about, in a sense, expanding the reach of Russian sort of capitalism. And I guess, what are your sort of comments about that, especially in relation to all the sort of things you've sort of brought up? As I guess a bit of a concluding question for the interview, because we'll be running out of time shortly.
Well, is there a continuity from Soviet times in today's Russia? No, not fundamentally. This is a quite different kind of society. It's a capitalist society in which you don't just have Soviet bureaucrats who derive their power from the state. You have independent capitalists running large industrial empires. You have rule by the oligarchs. Putin is an authoritarian. He doesn't allow these oligarchs to intervene in a meaningful way in politics. But at the same time, he rules on their behalf. And he prevents the kind of workers' organization which would constrain these bureaucrats in effect. He doesn't allow a socialist opposition to arise. Putin rules for the oligarchs and in their interests. It's not democracy, it's certainly capitalism, but it's a capitalism of a very strange kind. Some good friends of mine in Russia describe it as Jurassic capitalism, looking back to the film Jurassic Park. The dinosaurs there, the people who run the place, they're not Western-style capitalists. They operate in the manner and with the ethos and with the logic of the old corrupt Soviet economic managers. They're not particularly enterprising. They're not into investment. They're not really into innovation or modernization. They carry on in their own accustomed way, deriving profits largely through getting around the system and through doing fancy deals with one another. The system remains profoundly corrupt. It lacks dynamism. Growth in Russia in recent decades has been lethargic. You have growth rates of only 1-2% even before COVID, even before the intervention in Ukraine. It's a sick system, except now that it's a sick capitalist system instead of a sick socialism.
Oh, well, thanks for that, Renfrew. And I guess, do you, I guess, have any kind of final kind of comments that you'd like to kind of conclude this discussion on?
Well, there are enormous lessons to be drawn from the Soviet and Russian experience. Perhaps the most fundamental of them is that the role of the working class is absolutely fundamental. Gorbachev had a lot to say about democracy, but he was never talking about workers' democracy. He was talking about giving the liberal intelligentsia and the industrial managers their head, giving them political power, the right to say and organise, to talk and to organise as they wished. The critical thing about democracy is that it requires an active, politically engaged working class. That was never part of Gorbachev's project. If he had really been about democracy in the final years of the Soviet Union, he would have created genuine workers' organizations, political trade unions that directly represented workers and that were able to fight on their behalf against the bureaucrats, against the factory managers, on an active legal basis. That didn't exist. That would have created a real Soviet democracy that would have been able to bring about real reform within the Soviet system, within the socialist system, rather than the restoration of capitalism, rather than capitalist counter-revolution.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Renfrey. I think this has been a very interesting kind of and fascinating discussion with a good kind of overview, I guess, of the history of Gorbachev's legacy. Thank you very much, Renfrey, for being on our program.